Last week, last lesson, sometime on Sunday morning, we got started in chapter 12. You're probably wondering why I like to jump over to chapter 12 right at the first of the class, but maybe you'll understand by the time we get through tonight. I think chapter 12 really lays out the book in kind of almost a pictorial form, where we can see what's going on, and although there's no way to put a calendar line on this book. So don't start counting days and weeks and months and years, because you won't come up with that. I do think that if we look at the time frame from, let's say, creation all the way to the end of the Christian or the church dispensation, We can find pretty well on that line where we are. And just like was said to Daniel, or he said to Nebuchadnezzar, the church was formed, got started during the last days of the Roman Empire. And if we go back and look in Daniel, we find a lot of the same kinds of figures that we're seeing here in this book, although they are different in several ways. But when Daniel talked about the four empires that were going to come along and said that in the days of these last kings, the God of heaven is going to set up his kingdom. Well, that all came to pass. And the things that were used in the book of Daniel to identify kingdoms are quite a bit like the things that we're seeing here in the book of Revelation. But there are differences, and we'll talk about some of them tonight. I want to start again with Revelation 12:1. And I'm going to read through verse 4, and then there's some things that I want to point out, and if you have questions, we'll address them at that point. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his head, and his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered for to devour her child as soon as it was born. Kind of a gruesome picture if you stop and think about it. But then Satan is not much less than gruesome himself. In this, the first two verses here, a great wonder in heaven. That's how God identified the woman that has appeared on the scene. The next wonder that he talks about, he doesn't call it great. He says another wonder in heaven. And he talks of, behold, a great red dragon. What I've concluded, and I hope I've been able to bring it out to you so that you can understand what I'm talking about. I believe the woman represents God's faithful people throughout all of the ages that have gone by. And I think it still represents God's faithful people. Now, after Christ came on the scene and the church was formed, I believe the faithful in the church are the ones that are being identified in the last part of this part of the picture. When it talks about Satan here, I want you to just take a look at some of the things that he's called. He said, great red dragon, 7 heads, 10 horns, 7 crowns upon his head. These things really are the things that identify royalty. And what Satan is appearing to apparently doing here is he is crediting himself with being the prince. But it's a credit he doesn't deserve. Because Satan, he's mentioned as that old serpent called the devil, Satan. He's a deceiver of the whole world. And he and his angels were cast out of heaven. Okay? Now, these are the things that we see in these first few verses here. The woman, she's pictured as clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and a garland of 12 stars around her head. The picture that John is drawing for us is a picture of someone who is startling in the brilliance of her presentation. She comes on with all of the brilliance of the sun. Now, we have a hard time in our own minds understanding how something could be more brilliant than the sun. And I think that's the point of this, the way that she's presented here. God wants her to be recognized as a most important individual in this whole story. Because she is going to give birth to a man-child, and when we look at him, we see that he's no less than Jesus Christ. And the whole time of his life on earth is presented in one little short verse, the 5th verse of the the 12th chapter of Revelation. Said, and she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. That's all he says about him in Revelation. But that's not the whole story about him. But the point that John is making with this kind of a presentation is, he is going to tell the people in those churches and the people in other churches and us. Look, folks, this is going to be your environment for as long as you're on the earth. And that's what he's going to present to us. He will show us how the world looks at people who follow Christ, how the religious world looks at us, and how Satan looks at us. And it's an interesting story when you get into it. Now, any questions from anybody? Anything you'd like to bring up? Yes, Dennis?
Yes. And I don't want to jump ahead in the story, but we have this, the emptiness of Satan's power is actually demonstrated here, because we have this great dragon with all this seeming power, cannot even conquer or destroy this woman in her weakest moment when she's given birth, of this child in this weakest moment when it's just born. So in the very weakest of moments, God is still going to triumph. When Satan looks invulnerable, God will still triumph in the end.
That's a good point. And that's a point that we need to recognize as we continue this study. If we look at that fifth verse and we talk about Christ's entire life on earth comprehended in that one little verse, if you stop and think what John is presenting to us, he's going all the way back to Genesis 3:15. Somebody want to flip over right quick and read that one to us? Maybe a couple of verses that you'd like to want to read.
3:15?
Pardon?
3:15?
Yeah.
And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel.
Okay. And who's talking, and to whom is he talking?
God said this to the serpent.
Okay. And the serpent was who?
Satan.
He's in a deceptive type of character back in Genesis, and he's pegged here as being a deceiver of mankind. He's still at his old tricks. But he says, I'll put enmity between your seed and her seed. You'll bruise his heel, but he'll bruise your head. Now, the significance of that statement is Satan is going to be able to physically cause something to happen to Christ. But Christ is going to move against him in such a way that he destroys his whole authority. And that basically is the story that's going to come out with the presentation that John has given us about the book of Revelation. In the sixth verse of the 12th chapter, it says, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. We've seen that number before. We'll see another form of it is 42 months. And we'll see another form of it, time, times, and half a time. Well, there's a lot of confusion, but maybe I can straighten up some of that tonight. What period of time is that talking about? Well, it's talking about a time that begins right after Christ ascends. Just as soon as the church is in its formative stage, Satan starts to work. And he works through the people that are there in Jerusalem that are trying to put a stop to the things that are being taught. He's busy. Satan's very busy right then. But it says in this that a place had been prepared for her in the wilderness. God didn't just throw her out there in the wilderness and say, fend for yourself. He had a place prepared for her. And it was set up in such a way that the people round about her, and the wilderness basically is talking about mankind. She has a place God has created for her in the midst of mankind, and it's there to maybe help her fend off the things that Satan's going to bring against her. Okay? Now, if we look at that, what does that tell us? A place prepared for her by God in the wilderness. It says she will be nourished there. Let's see. For this time, 1,260 days, 1,260 days. A place prepared of God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. What is this telling us? Well, for one thing, God didn't just throw her out there in the wilderness and say, fend for yourself. He had prepared a place for her. And one thing that came to my mind in studying this lesson to see what happens here, interesting story about Elijah. When Jezebel had promised him that by this time tomorrow, you're going to be in the same configuration that they are today. So Elijah hit the ground running. And he ran, and he ran for literally days. And it talks about when he got there, he was just basically out of it. He hadn't had food or water for close to 40 days. If we stop and think about going without food and water for 40 days, that's about the limit a man can go. Physically, you have hit the wall. But God told Elijah, he says, why are you sitting here? I've got things for you to do. So he made him eat, and he went for another period of time on one meal that he was fed there where he had stopped. Best I can figure is down close to Beersheba, maybe a little below that. But he stopped, and then he had again several days to travel before he got to a place where he could rest and build his strength back up. He went to Mount Horeb, and there was a cave there that he took refuge in, and God came, spoke to him again. He says, stand up. And he made him take nourishment again, and then Elijah was told by God, I've got one more job for you to do. I want you to go back to the northern part of Israel, the land. Said, I want you to anoint a king in Syria. I want you to pass your mantle to Elisha. And then he was going to ascend into heaven. Now, God used Elijah to do one more job before he would give him okay to give it up. Now, if we look at what's happened to this woman, she has been transported by wings given to her by God, transported to a place in the wilderness. And like I said, I believe this is talking about just mankind as a whole. She didn't go out and do nothing. She went out And God provided sustenance for her, and it went on and on and on. And she's still in the wilderness. But how is she sustained? What is God sustaining her with? The gospel. That's the strengthening food for any Christian. Now we'll have nourishment of a physical kind, but basically our strength comes from the gospel. That's what she was nourished with. And that went on for as long as she was in that wilderness. Okay? And I've said it's, I fully believe that's talking about mankind at the time when John was writing this to the people in the churches there. And by extension, I believe he will be telling us the same thing. We need to feed well on God's word, because that's the only thing it will sustain us against what Satan's going to throw at us. And he will be throwing it at us. Okay? So God has prepared this woman, and he has made it possible for her to exist. Notice it says that Satan poured out of his mouth a flood, because he wanted to wash her away with the magnitude of the things that were thrown at her, so that she would be destroyed basically by the flood. But the earth absorbed the flood so that she was not destroyed. So the picture that John is giving us here is God's care for this woman and what she is. And I think she represents, signifies, as John put it, and he gave it to us by signs. He has given us a sign that said, God cares for his church. He cares for his faithful followers. And he's not going to leave you out there by yourself. And as we go through the study, we're going to find before any major change occurs, God takes the inventory and counts every single soul that's hit. And that happens every time. And when we look at this little chart up here, you got 7 cells on each row. There are little intervals between several of these. And in those intervals, God will do a count or will give a mark to his people. And those marks show that this is one of mine. And he doesn't lose count of them. Questions?
So what do you make of her offspring that the devil pursues responsibly?
Okay. Well, Christ was her first offspring. And I would suppose that we would be the product of the gospel working in men's hearts. We would be children of God. And I think those are the children or the offspring that dragon looked for when he could not destroy Christ, and he failed to destroy the woman, and then he went after her children. And I think those would be the individual Christians that lived at that time.
Is there anything
in this period that indicates that people can fall. You know, that God marks these people and says, these are mine.
Well, it's the same thing that, yes, it is. You can fall.
Well,
but the point is made, nobody can cause you to fall. You fall because you have gotten weak and accepted something that you should not have accepted, or you have started running with a crowd that you should not have been running with. And if you're weakened, you fall from within yourself.
But I guess what I was asking in this picture that is drawn here, is there any, you know, maybe I'm asking not to put too much in one area, but is there anything, any picture here that describes that in this Revelation 12?
Well, yeah. And it talks about it in terms of the Book of Life. If our name is taken out of there for any reason, we don't get the reward that God has for us. We've got to have our name written in the Book of Life. And if it gets taken off of there, we're in a world of hurt. Kathy, who's that?
Maybe we'll have to answer Brother Ron's question, but in verse 17, the dragon, Satan, goes off to what's worded here in this version, went off to make war with the rest of her children who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. So I guess in my head I'm thinking, if you don't keep the commandments and you don't hold to the testimony of Jesus,
that would be a necessary inference from what is said right there. Yes.
And another thing about that verse that I've been thinking since we were sitting here reading it was, we should not be surprised that these things are continuing, because that tells us that they're going to right there.
Yep.
We should not be
That's
surprised
exactly
that they continually
right.
have to battle Satan. Because he's always going to be on after us.
Mm-hmm. And his desire is for anyone or as many as he can get, but Satan is going to be working to get us out of that book as long as we live. Now, there's one other thing I want to get. Was that the first bell, or did I hear a bell? Good, I don't want to hear a bell. If we look in this record, in the 12th chapter, it's talking about 1,203 score days, 1,260 days. That's the same as 42 months. That's the same as 3.5 years, counting the way the Hebrews counted their time. Okay? I said last time we met that I'm not sure about the days, the months. I think the thing about it is it's just a different way of saying the same thing. It's a day-by-day thing or a month-by-month thing. But the 3.5 years, I think, gives us a clue as to what kind of a time frame we're talking about. 7, if you recall, is a complete cycle. It's full. 3.5 is half of 7, or as it, to put it in the way a lot of the commentaries put it, it is a broken cycle. 7 would have been a complete cycle. You ain't got 7, you got 3.5. It's a broken cycle. I think that fits better than anything that I've encountered so far, because, and I want you to turn over And I put this, I was going to get my buddy to make some copies, but my buddy didn't show up, so I didn't get any copies made, but I can make sure you get them next time. Chapter 20, turn to that, and I want to read just the first part of it. And in chapter 20, listen to what we have. In the first three verses, "And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great, great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years. When did that 1,000 years start, and when did it end? I'm saying it started when Christ ascended back to heaven. It started at the very first of the church dispensation, if you will. And look where it ends. And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison. And just a little bit after that, it said, well, in chapter 20, verse 8 through about 10, and when 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about in the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast, the false prophet, are, and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever." The 1,000 years stopped when Satan was released from that prison and allowed to go out and draw together his followers and go up against Christ. Now, when we get to this part in studying through it, they don't tell anything about the battle. That's not the important point. They all showed up, Christ won. And it went from there. And Satan, all of them that didn't have their name written in the Lamb's Book of Life, along with the beast from the sea, the beast from the earth, the harlot Babylon, and everybody that didn't have their name on that book of life was thrown into the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. That's the end of the 1,000 years. Okay? There's not going to be but one of them, and it's not on earth. It's counting the time between the beginning of the church and the end of the dispensation. And the difference is in the 1260 days, the 42 months, the time times and half a time, is we have three or four different sections that are coming all the way up to and stopping just before they get to the final judgment. This 1,000 years covers the entire dispensation. It's two ways of measuring those two different time periods. They're both symbolic, and it simply means that God is allowing this to go just so far. And he called a halt to it. Question. Wrong.
Yes. This thousand years that God has allowed Satan to, if you will, not rule the world, but do what he does, at the end of this thousand years, basically is judgment.
That's right. And it's in this part of the book. We see the judgment taking place. And it shows the two parts of the judgment. It shows how, basically who's in control of it.
But this is in chapter
20. Yeah, I think the judgment itself is probably in 19, because the beast from the sea and the beast from the earth and the harlot Babylon will all have been thrown into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone, before he gets down to Satan. They are addressed in reverse order. The first one we see destroyed is the harlot Babylon. And then we see the two beasts. And then here is where he shows us Satan too is thrown in there, along with everyone that wasn't written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Fair enough. Yes, Sheila.
One of the things that became more obvious to me as you were talking about chapter 12 was that the devil is going to throw everything he's got at us, and that the end result is God's going to take care of us as long as we are his. You know, the ones that are not his, he's not going to protect them from the devil. He's going to protect those, you know, who follow him, who do what he wants them to do. He's going to protect us from horrible things. No matter what the devil throws at us, he's going to protect us and take care of us as long as we remain faithful to him. And in some ways, it's a great deal of comfort, because, you know, even when you go through the most difficult trials, it's nice to know that God's going to be there, you know, even when you have to go through that.
Yeah, and don't read into that, and I know Sheila isn't saying this, but don't read into it that God is not going to let you be tried. We'll be tried. That's guaranteed. Because Satan is going to do everything he can to get us away from God. But God says he's not going to be able to make you do something you don't want to do. And what we have to do is strengthen ourselves by feeding on the word, so that the trials that Satan throws at us, we're prepared for and can handle. And death is not a punishment. It's a release from the things that are thrown at us by Satan. That was, I take it, the second one. Told you I didn't want to hear that.